This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. NPR will have more coverage of the shooting that occurred this morning in Alexandria, Virginia, where a gunman opened fire on the GOP baseball team while it was practicing, wounding several people. You can also find updates at WVXU.org. Coming up on today's show, with the 4th of July just a few weeks away, a look at fireworks laws and safety issues. First up, the Lloyd Library and Museum and Meddling with Nature have partnered on an exhibit called Off the Page, which brings the 300-year-old work of botanical illustrator Maria Sibylla Merian back to life. The exhibit features three-dimensional recreations of her illustrations using preserved plant, animal, and insect specimens. Joining us to talk about Off the Page are Lloyd Library and Museum Executive Director Patricia Von Skake and Meddling with Nature taxidermist Jeremy Johnson. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jeremy and Patricia, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us a little bit more about Maria Sibylla Merian.
Well, she was a fascinating woman. She is considered one of the pioneering women of science. 300 years ago, and people have to stop and think about how dramatic that was. In the late 1600s, she was traveling to South America to do botanical and insect exploration. And she created botanical drawings, and the drawings included not just the flowers, but included the bugs and the other things that she saw in nature. So that in and of itself was pretty remarkable. She popularized and helped to discover the theory of metamorphosis, sort of like Charles Darwin wasn't the only person that knew about evolution.
She noticed this, like, 150 years before Darwin observed
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. And she was one of the few people to also realize that a caterpillar and a butterfly were part of the same animal, so to speak. Whereas,
that's really kind of a hard thing to imagine, you know, like when you're imagining like a ancient Greeks, you know, kids looking at caterpillars and things like that, they're going to notice that they turn into butterflies, but it was not part of the scientific canon. And that's where her work became incredibly important, as it became an actual provable fact that insects came through a process of metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And she also is considered one of the world's first ecologists because not just through her art, but her understanding, she realized that a bug on a plant had an impact. Whereas prior to that, if somebody wanted to create an illustration of one or the other, they didn't see the whole system. So she's got these lovely illustrations that have tadpoles in the water and the bugs and the plants and how the whole system interacts. So she was very much ahead of her time.
And wasn't she aiming more for the common person?
Yes.
As opposed to the scientific
that's
community?
That's also like the books that we have at the Lloyd, like the 1705 in particular, that's written in Dutch. That's not written in Latin. And that was intended for that exact reason, so that people could actually read it in the country. And she wasn't even Dutch. She was German. So she had to have her own stuff translated into the common language in order for it to even be published.
What was she working with, Jeremy, in terms of – was she using oil paint, watercolor paint?
Actually, in Amsterdam at the time, it was against guild regulations to allow women to paint in oil. So she was using watercolor, which is – I mean, that's a far cry from where we are now, and that sounds really bizarre, but – but yeah, she was not actually allowed to work in oils.
Did she make her own colors?
She did a lot of that, yes. And actually, that's a lot of what you see at our, you know, exhibit at the Lloyd is explaining how she would find pigments and things like that in Suriname and turn those into watercolor pigments.
And then also, she worked from engravings, and her father was an engraver, so that's where she learned that trade. She self-published these gorgeous elephant folios, and they were on a subscription series, like Audubon, again, would do 125 or so years later. So it was several years in the making. So that's why there's a gap between when she actually was there in the late 1690s and 1705 when the book came out. Another thing that I think is really fascinating about the book is that there are only about these sets of books, there are really only about 60 still in existence in the world. Most of those are in the hands of private collectors. And in addition to that, many of those have been cannibalized. So someone would take out a particular plate and sell it for thousands of dollars. So for us to have an intact version of that book that is available for the public to come in for free to see is really a rare treat and something that you could travel the world and not be able to see. So
this is a really unique exhibit then.
It is, mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And this is a good fit for the Lloyd, too,
since
she's a botanical illustrator.
She is a botanical illustrator. We have one of the best collections of botanical illustrations in the world, everything from, especially with a focus on botanical medicine. And she talks about that as well in Metamorphosis, what the various uses of the plants are, some of them medicinal, some of them for cooking, some poisonous. Mm-hmm. So she goes into great detail for that.
Can you describe some of the pieces that are in the exhibit?
Yeah.
So we've got
Take turns if you like.
Sure.
One that's, I guess, the most taxidermy related is a caiman, which is kind of like a type of alligator, mm-hmm. Familiar in like Florida. So there's one of the pieces in her a later version of the book that has a caiman wrestling a coral snake that's trying to eat a baby out of an egg, a baby caiman. You know. And so we were able to get a full-size caiman from a zoo, died of natural causes, and managed to mount this in the exact same position as the illustration. And that's kind of the point of the off-the-page thing, is we're trying to show this in full round in three dimensions. That's certainly one that took a lot of time.
So just a little bit of backstory about how this came to be. So Jeremy came to the Lloyd about a year and a half or so ago, mm-hmm. maybe, and looking for inspiration. And a reproduction of this book was shown to him, and he sort of immediately became enthralled with it. And so we started tossing around the idea of what an exhibition would look like, that sort of thing. So what he's done, so on one side of the room, you see these rare texts, but he's taken high-resolution digital images of them, and then he's taken elements of it, like a giant beetle or a butterfly, and literally sourced from all over the world these specimens, and they are coming off the page. So if you look at an illustration and there's a beetle that's 4 inches large and you think that maybe Maria was being a little overdramatic here.
Nope.
No, indeed. She was doing it to scale, and you can see that bug coming off the page.
If I don't like bugs, will I still like this exhibit?
I think you will. And it's also beautiful. I mean, people really remark on that. They were like, oh, I was expecting to be kind of like shocked or grossed out, but I'm really overwhelmed by the beauty of it.
And her work, you know, like not to kind of harp on the Audubon stuff, but it looks a lot like the Audubon prints. And I think that's something important, especially for radio, for people to know. Like, these are very large prints, and they're very, very, very detailed. So, like, when you think of 1600s engravings, you think of, you know, like, this stuff is a little bit more crude, but this is very, very well done stuff.
And to scale, for the most part. So that's, as you mentioned, why the pages have to be so big.
Yeah.
Jeremy, can you tell us about meddling with nature and how you got started in taxidermy in the first place?
Yeah, actually, I got started in taxidermy because of medical illustration. So I was really interested in dissection. And so that's where the taxidermy started, because I ended up having all these skins left over from these things that I would find on the road, usually, like raccoons and cats and things. And so that turned into kind of an organization over the course of 10 years, which involves like an education component, the actual commissionable artwork stuff. And since I do a lot of the anatomy thing, also we get commissioned to do film props. So if you need an armadillo to look like it got smashed on a highway, then I'm the one you call.
Hmm. And you're using mainly things you find, like you said, on the side of the road. Okay.
Yeah, or things that died in zoos.
Or naturally.
Stuff
like that.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't do hunting stuff. Not that there's an issue against hunting, really. It's just that that's not our work.
That's not your preference.
Yeah.
You're completely self-taught in taxidermy?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this started, what, when you were a child, this interest?
Taking things apart started when I was a child. Yeah. I grew up in Kansas, and so it's a lot more kind of nature than what you would find in downtown Cincinnati, I suppose. But that all just tended to progress. I think I would consider myself a naturalist first, and that's why a show like this is really interesting to me. But the taxidermy, it's always a really nice thing to kind of say at parties, you know, if you're trying to get somebody interested in what you do, it's like, I'm a taxidermist.
And they go, oh, wow.
Yes. You can kind of command a conversation that way.
Do you actually give demonstrations on how taxidermy is
done? I certainly do. Actually, we've got one coming up this weekend called Making New Friends. Sadly, all of our tickets are gone now, but yeah. Introduction into Making New Friends.
Okay. What kind of reaction do you get to that? I mean, that just sounds like that'd be fascinating to watch, but kind mm-hmm. of like...
Yeah, you know, we've been trying to do so many different types of workshops, whether that be entomology, like butterflies and moths and things like that, or how to skin animals, or just like the procedure of taxidermy. Every one of them commands a different crowd, but I am noticing that we're getting a lot more kids interested, which I think is fascinating. Even like a lot of the work that we did at the museum.
You're getting
center
kids
too.
Interested in science, I would say, is what
yes,
you're really
absolutely.
Getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they're not. They're they're not afraid. Kids are not afraid of this.
Yeah, we've had lots of children in to see this exhibit. This is probably one of the most kid-friendly exhibits mm-hmm. that we've had. So that's a real interesting audience. We're also doing something. It's not taxidermy, but with Jeremy in July, we're doing a workshop called Paint Like Marion. Mm-hmm. And we're going to actually have engravings of canvases. And then Jeremy's going to walk the participants of the workshop through what some of the styles and practices were in the 16th or 17th century, really.
And that's actually, that's a really important point, too, because she made a lot of it, because we're taking photographs of older editions, or I guess younger editions of her book that remained uncolored, meaning that she did not paint them. So they're black and white. And she was able to offer these at a cheaper price, or the family was able to offer them at a cheaper price, and give people kind of instructions through the descriptions of the plates on how these things should be colored, like what flower should be red, what flower should be yellow, what the insects actually look like. And that's why she's so detailed in her descriptions, was so that people could go ahead and pick up a paintbrush and paint them themselves if they couldn't afford the full-colored editions. So that – This Paint Like Marion night is just – it's going to be a really interesting experience, I think, for everybody.
And then at the end of the evening, they get to see what it is, what she did with it, and compare
to
theirs and take theirs with them. Mm-hmm. So
And we will continue our conversation about Off the Page. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss Off the Page, the exhibit that's showing at the Lloyd Library and Museum, and the work of Maria Sibylla Marion, our Lloyd Library and Museum Executive Director Patricia Von Skake, and Meddling with Nature taxidermist Jeremy Johnson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. As I'm talking to you, I just get the sense of this is a fun exhibit.
It's a blast.
How much fun was this, putting this whole thing together?
Oh, it was just fascinating. Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, we just growing the plants took a year from seeds to saplings and buying trees and things like that. So, I mean, that's the thing, too. It's not just insects and caimans. It's plants as well, and just all the color correcting of the photographs that we took of the plates themselves. It's involved so many different skills that I now have. So, and my entire team too.
You've done larger animals, I guess, for the most part. Mm-hmm. What's it like doing insects?
It is a lot more delicate. And the process is obviously different. It's basically like drying them out and then relaxing them with moisture and then positioning them with pins, which is a lot different than, like, say, a tiger or something like that. They're related, of course, and anatomically it's important to recognize the differences and the similarities of all species. But I find it very time-consuming and delicate. Because, I mean, like, morpho butterflies, they're brilliant blue. You probably see them at the Krone Conservatory, you know, butterfly show, things like that. But you can't really touch them because the scales, like the iridescent blue, will fade off on your fingers. So you have to be really, really delicate with this stuff.
Patricia, it does sound like it's a really intricate, time-consuming thing that you put together with this exhibit that you and Jeremy have come up with.
Yeah, and one of the things that we do, too, is we have a couple of panels that put it into context. So if you want to know a little bit more or understand what it's like. So it is very much a museum experience. Mm-hmm. So the sort of thing that you would expect when you go to an exhibition at a major museum.
Okay, and this is the work of Maria Sibylla Merian. And again, she's a botanical illustrator. 300 years ago, that's what's so hard to believe, right, is that she was doing all this 300 years ago, and it's still very relevant work today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She, and they say, you know, it's hard to prove things like this, but they say that this is one of the first expeditions to another country that was done solely for a scientific purpose or artistic purpose. It was not to collect any goods from South America.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation that we're having. So 300 years ago in Amsterdam, that would have been the height of the Renaissance period. Is that right?
A little bit after.
A little bit after the Renaissance period?
During the major colonization.
The colonial period, yeah.
Which has its own dark moments, too, of course, with slavery, which is something that we talk about a little bit in that show, too, just as far as certain plants that were used by the Dutch for certain things. I mean, there's a lot of darkness in that too. But the Age of Exploration was what really captivated Maria and her entire family, because she comes from a family not necessarily of explorers, but of illustrators. And I think artists are sometimes the best explorers.
And to touch on what Jeremy had said, that she wasn't just going for crops or financial information, because the other few botanists that would go to the area, they would be looking at things like, what sort of things would work in a plantation and be sustainable to raise and make lots of money on. And she was really going for the science of it, to explore these plants. A lot of these plants, of course, hadn't been seen anywhere else in the world. And in fact, there wasn't even a European name for them. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the name will be what the indigenous people called it. Sometimes it would be a plant that no one had seen before.
I think you described her as a pioneering scientist.
Absolutely.
She absolutely was.
Yeah.
And this is before kind of the binomial nomenclature thing, you know, like of Linnaeus, of naming animals like Homo sapiens, stuff like that. So there was no Latin name for these insects or these plants. And so that actually became kind of a challenge within the last few years of making sure that all these species are correctly identified. And that was definitely some complicated stuff for us too. There was a version of the Metamorphosis text that came out last year. But prior to that, like, we were asking Google Translate to do some pretty crazy things.
For instance,
just trying to figure out what archaic Dutch translations were for insects that we could not find. We just couldn't identify them.
Wow.
And even the plants, there are things called banana plant. Doesn't look anything like my idea of a banana.
Your idea of a banana plant. Jeremy, can you tell us a little bit more about the process you went through in creating these plants and these insects and these animals?
Tracy Blankemeyer and I, she works with me every day. She's at the studio currently working right now. She kind of went on to the plant angle, and I went on to the insect angle. So we kind of divided the forces up a little bit. So she was finding saplings and seeds, and I was finding moths, butterflies, beetles. And then we'd kind of, you know, mix them together as the time grew. But I mean, there's something like, there's over 60 plates, to choose from, because the later version has more plates. And so we had to take all these plates and decide which ones we're actually going to do, which ones we had the plants for, the insects for, or just which ones were feasible, that would look really good. Like the caiman, we really wanted to do because it's a massive piece with, you know, an alligator in it, you know? So of course we want to do that. But finding that was not easy. So a lot of the time taken was just sourcing it. Because we've got businesses and collectors from all over the world that we were finding these insects from. Because some of them are really not easy. Like beetle that she was talking about, the cervicornis, it is massive. It's a good 6 inches.
Okay, so that was the large beetle that you were talking about earlier. Okay.
Finding that easy, affording it, not so much, so we had to fund it. So then we went into a fundraising campaign, and the Hale Foundation was very generous in helping us with that.
Now, how does this compare to other projects that you've done?
It is quite different. I love doing museum shows. I like throwing as much information as possible. You know, I like the design of it. But usually they are not as, I guess I would say, not as constraining, which, again, rules will set you free sort of thing. So it was nice having a very defined end goal, a very defined point, because usually they are very taxidermy based and about nature and anatomy primarily. So this was interesting to work off of somebody else's work, especially somebody from 300 years ago, and with the collection that the Lloyd has to offer, because there are no place. I mean, you can't do this in very many museums in the world. Maybe, I guess, like 60 of them, possibly.
Yeah. Well, but not most of those museums, are
in people's houses. Yeah. So to have the actual text, the actual books, along with the actual specimens, the real flowers, real leaves, real beetles, you're just not going to find something like that anywhere else.
It adds so much to the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So, Patricia, and you have Paint Like Marion, one of the events coming up. Okay, when is that again?
Paint Like Marion is July 27.
Okay. What are some of the other events you have coming up in conjunction with
this? Well, we're really looking forward to our event this Friday, which is from 5:30 to 7:30, and it's a dessert reception. Marion was fascinated with pineapples. In fact, the first two plates, and they are gorgeous in her work. One has a bug on it, which happens to be a cockroach, which may take a little bit of the delight away from it, but didn't take her delight away from pineapples. And so we're going to have a dessert reception where we're going to have all kinds of pineapple desserts. It's free. You can view the exhibit, and then Jeremy's going to talk about Marion and pineapples and Marion and Dutch desserts. So
it's going to be a really fun.
Yeah.
And the macaron bar has a donated things to this exhibit, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And the cockroach thing, that's kind of fun too. She wanted to illustrate her favorite plant with the most vile of insects. And so she juxtaposed those together on purpose.
And in her notes, she says it's the most vile insect in the Americas. We would probably agree with that.
That's been a universal thing for hundreds of years now. So.
Yes.
What are some of the other things going on?
So the following week, on Friday, June 23rd, we're going to have a wine tasting fundraiser, and the focus is going
to be... Did she like wine, too?
She loved wine.
Okay.
She made wine out of everything.
Okay.
Including pineapples.
Wine, okay.
But we're going to feature four South American wines, and just in keeping with her... where she did her ground baking research and refreshments. So we encourage people to go to our website and find out more information about that. And then the last Friday of the month, final Friday, we're going to have a gallery walk. So people can stop in and they can talk with Jeremy, who curated his part of it. And then our co-curator, Betsy Krudhofer, and she'll talk about the rare book aspect of it.
And what are the hours for the exhibit itself, and how long is it running?
We are open from 9 until 4, Monday through Saturday in June. In July, it's going to be Monday through Friday. And the exhibit runs through the end of July.
Jeremy and Patricia, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Lloyd Library and Museum Executive Director Patricia Van Skake and Meddling with Nature taxidermist Jeremy Johnson. At WVXU.org, you can find links for more information on Off the Page and for information about the other programs and events and exhibits at the Lloyd Library and Museum this summer.